What's up, Power Players? It's your host and founder of Empower Nani. I'm coming to you live with another episode of Power Talk. So welcome to Season 1, Episode 77. Let's go. Now, I bet you guys are wondering, Nani, who'd you bring into the Power Talk today? All the guests have been so amazing. Well, guess what, guys? I brought someone that's very near and dear to my heart. He actually gave me my first chance to speak on stage that ended up being an opportunity to open up for John Mallette, Sam Badikar, and one of my favorite mentors of all time, Ryan Stuman. I'm featuring today Mr. Tony Delgado, Anthony Delgado, also known as Tony Disrupt, baby. For those of you guys that don't know who Anthony Delgado is, Anthony Delgado is the founder of Disrupt University. He's known as American software developer and an internet entrepreneur, widely known as a professional hacker in the developer community. Anthony Delgado has won numerous hackathons sponsored by Fortune 500 tech companies like Google, IBM, Intel, Facebook, and Microsoft. He's hosted by organizations including Rutgers University, the New Jersey Institute of Technology, the AT&T Developer Summit in New York City. And his entrepreneur tendency started when he was 18 selling on eBay and Amazon, where he began making a lot of money by burning and selling mixtapes, going from $50 a week to $3,000 a day using the internet. Those entrepreneurs' tendency have led Anthony to where he is today. Currently, Anthony is busy running Disrupt and helping people create things that are awesome. Some of the well-known individuals and brands that he has worked with include Gerard Adams, Grant Cardone, Ty Lopez, Steve Madden, Marvel Comics, and K-Swiss. I'm super excited for you guys to dive into this conversation today. So I have three requirements, and that's this. One, make sure you turn off all your distractions. Make sure you turn off all your notifications. Make sure that you completely focus in onto this conversation. Requirement number two, make sure that you have a pen and paper handy, pencil and a piece of paper, a coloring book and a crayon, your phone to take notes, whatever it may be, just make sure you have something to take notes. And requirement number three is real simple. Once this conversation's over, once you're done taking your notes, what I want you to do is go ahead and implement these strategies to your life. Because we all know that action is awesome, but execution is even better. And these conversations and this show is about you getting empowered. Empower of who you are, empower of your brand, empower of your relationships, and empower of your business. So go ahead and implement these strategies once this combo is done. And the last question I got for you is this. You ready? I'm ready. Let's go. How you doing? How you living? How you being? It's your girl, Nani, and I'm coming to you live with Anthony Delgado, aka Tony, aka the man with the plan. If you guys don't know who Tony Delgado is, you better find out. Go follow him right now. But seriously, Tony Delgado is the founder and chief officer of the Disrupt Foundation, which is a social impact movement to grow Puerto Rico's technology ecosystem. He's an author. He's an entrepreneur. He's a hacker. And honestly, he's a great man. I hold him close to my heart. Gave me my first chance to speak. And then it's just been a spiral after that. So, you know, I got a lot of love for you. How you doing, Tony?
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I'm excited. How's everything going?
I'm blessed. I'm blessed. Just here in Puerto Rico, just bought my first house. So that's exciting. Going to be closing on the house in a couple of weeks. And got engaged and all these crazy kind of life events have been occurring.
That's the dream.
Yeah. The American dream. The Puerto Rican dream.
You're on a high. That's great, man. So yeah. I kind of want to just talk a little bit about your childhood. Just to get a little deeper understanding of who you are. I know that you were raised by your mom. She gave you your first computer when you were in second grade. She taught you coding. And from there, it just spiraled on. But I really want to know, like, what environment were you around? Did you have, you know, a man figure in your life? Did that really affect you, who you are today? So can you tell us a little bit about you? Because I've met you in person and your energy is contagious. And how you live your life, it says more than anything, how you present yourself than, you know, how you represent yourself. You know what I mean? To me, you're a great man. So I want to know more about it.
Thank you. Yeah. So I guess it's easy to summarize stuff in a sound clip, and I'm good at that because I do a lot of marketing and fun stuff like that. But, yeah. You know, it's easy to kind of skip over the tough parts. And I think that's why it's good that platforms like this exist is so that you can kind of go into, you know, the nitty gritty and things of that nature. But yeah, I was, I grew up with a single mother. My dad left when I was 2 years old, and he ended up getting locked up when I was five, and he's been locked up ever since. He's doing life in jail, so he's like never coming home. And that definitely affected me in a lot of different ways. I mean, I think early on, I was always looking for mentors, looking for role models. So whether it was, you know, my uncles, or whether it was, you know, kids at school. I notoriously, in eighth grade, I took a senior girl to the prom. And that was because I was always hanging out with the older kids. And, you know, I think, how old was I? I think I was 18 the first time I went to Vegas. And I went to Vegas with a bunch of my friends. We were all like 20, 21 and over. And yeah, so I was always hanging out with kids that were older than me. I got my first ATM card when I was like 14 or something. Shout out to my mom, because she took me to the bank at a really young age. I don't even think you can do this anymore. I know a lot of young entrepreneurs, 17-year-old entrepreneurs, that they can't even get bank accounts. But back then, I think he could be like 12 or 14 or something. So
yeah,
as early as I could remember, I had banking and checking. And I remember I used to go down the shore and rent hotel rooms. And I used to tell them, no, it's, do you have ID? And be like, no, I don't have ID, but look, I have a bank card. I'm an adult. Look. And I used to get them to rent me stuff. But yeah, I mean, I grew up as an entrepreneur. My mom was a big influence on that early on. I was the first kid on my block with the internet. And back then it was like dial up, like super slow. And I started selling stuff online, and I realized that I went from making, you know, 50 bucks a day selling mixtapes. I used to sell like 50 cent mixtapes, used to burn them and just sell them in class and shit. That's and cool. I went from making like 50 bucks a week to making $3,000 a day. And then I was like, oh wow, that's now I'm making more than my teachers. And yeah, and then I kind of dived headfirst in entrepreneurship since then.
I love that. And I love the fact that, like you said, most people don't tell about the story or like the parts that pained you or hurt you. Is there any point in your younger childhood part where you had that aha moment where you're like, man, what am I doing? So like going to Vegas, just showing you had your ATM card, where was that point for you where you're like, man, I got to make a change? Because I'm sure entrepreneurship came to you, but where was it where it was like, okay, if you want to take this seriously, okay, this is your life, Tony. Okay, you got a great mother figure. Like, when are things going to change for you? What was that aha moment for you?
Well, I mean, I think it was, it's probably not one moment, but there were a lot of them. I was always trying to create financial freedom. Like, I remember when I was really young, I was always like Googling like financial freedom, but like, what is that? Like back then there was no Gary Vee. There was no, even like Twitter was like new. Like there was really nothing. There was no social media really. There's like MySpace. And, but I remember, you know, I always wanted financial freedom. I couldn't figure it out. And I had a lot of bad role models. So like my role models were like Rick Ross, 50 Cent, Lil Wayne, like all these music guys.
All the music guys showing you all the wrong things.
Yeah, all the music guys. Cause they were the only people that like made videos. So that was who you watched. And then early on, you know, I was selling weed in high school. And then I just kept getting in trouble. I kept getting caught and kept getting, you know, people's moms telling on. My mom found weed in my bed when I was in high school. She threw it down the toilet. She flushed it down the toilet. And then I was getting locked up. I mean, I think the first time I got locked up was probably like 14, 15. But I was always trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And then it got to a point when I think I was 19, 20, and I was arrested, and the bail and the lawyer and all these fees and fines, and I was like, this doesn't make sense, like from a business standpoint, like from a money standpoint, like I didn't believe that there was anything wrong. I was mostly just selling pot. So I didn't believe there was anything morally wrong with selling pot. I actually thought it should be legalized way before it was. I mean, now if I was a pot entrepreneur, I'd be like on the cover of Forbes or something.
But, killing it.
But, you know, back then it wasn't legal. So I had strong political views, and I thought it should be legal, but the fact was it wasn't. And that was a big that's a big realization for me. Like, just because you believe something doesn't mean you don't have to operate within the rules of the game that you're playing.
Yeah.
So the game of living in New York and New Jersey was that pot wasn't legal. Now, I think California was legalized by then, and I think Colorado was next, and Amsterdam was always legal, right? So if I wanted to sell pot and I really believed in it, I could have moved to California, or I could have moved to Amsterdam, and I could have started a business. But I was playing against the rules, and I did that a lot based on my own ideology. And it took me a long time to learn to separate my personal ideology from how I operate in the world.
Yeah.
Because I used to just operate solely based on my own ideology. Like, I think weed is legal, so I'm going to sell it. I think I didn't have a license until I was 20, 27. I don't know. It was really old. Like, and I was driving.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I didn't think that legally human beings should be bound by having to go and get a license, but I can still hold that personal ideology. But if I'm playing the game of a United States citizen, well, then I have to operate within the rules of that game, or I'm not going to do well at the game.
Yeah.
And it took me a while. It took me a lot of times of getting locked up. I remember one time I got locked up for hanging out on a corner. I was hanging out with these kids, and we were just like walking around smoking a joint, and these kids decide they want to rob people. So they're robbing Mexicans. They're like, just going to Mexicans and like, hey, let me get your wallet, Poppy. And they're just like taking guys' wallets and laughing about it, because it's like 20 kids and what is one guy going to do, right? And then the cops came, and I didn't rob anybody. But since I'm hanging out on that corner, every single person that was on the corner got taken in.
Yep.
And
flocked together.
Yep. And had to spend a bunch of money on bail and other stuff. And I remember thinking like, no, like I can't do this. I can't. I remember trying to figure out, reverse engineer, like, why am I here? And how can I operate in the world so that I never, ever, ever have to be here ever again?
I love that. I think that's powerful, because a lot of people take their way of thinking and they still run with it, right? I think that a main problem with everybody is that they don't want to get honest with themselves on what needs to change. And a lot of the time, that what needs to change is your perspective. I was the same way. How I thought was my belief, right? Like, nah, I can't get in trouble for doing this. It doesn't make sense to me. Why would I get in trouble? It's the law. I'm breaking it. It's the people that I'm hanging around. I was like, no, I'm good. So I love that you mentioned that, because you've definitely turned your mess into a mission. You give your of service, and you're taking your skill, and you wanted to teach it to others. Now you get into that lifestyle. How do you transition to becoming a coder, or becoming a hacker, and becoming a digital marketer and really monetizing off of it? I know that you had a brick and mortar company that you ended up selling, and then you got into the coding business. But where was that, where you're like, wait, I got this awesome skill that I've known my whole life, and I've been blowing it away. This is what's going to help me monetize. You know what I mean? Like, this is what's going to help me make money.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I had a clothing store. And even before that, I was selling stuff on eBay and Amazon, selling clothing on eBay and Amazon. And I was making money. And I sold the store. And then I went online, and I kind of became a digital nomad. And then simultaneously, there was an undercover cop. I've told this story before, so I'll keep it short. So an undercover cop came into my store and entrapped me and made me sell him weed. So basically, the guy comes into the store. Hey, do you know where I can get some pot? I gave him somebody's phone number. And because I gave him someone's phone number, I was implemented. And all this stuff happens. And at that point, it had been quite a few years since I had made the decision that didn't make sense. I'd made the decision, no, I'm going to start a store. I'm going to open a store. I'm going to, you know, this doesn't make financial sense. I don't want to be in trouble with the law anymore. But still, I was, you know, hanging out with, you know, gang members and shady people, questionable people that were coming into the store and buying stuff. And I was still kind of in the wrong circles. And this still ended up happening. So at that point, I went to New York City. I was living in Jersey at the time. I moved to New York City, and I was basically a digital nomad with warrants, if you can believe that. So I went to New York City, and I lived there for almost 5 years with these outstanding warrants. And I was making money online. So I was coding, I was making websites for people. I started an online magazine at that time, ended up getting millions of views, and then we monetized it with Google advertising. And I built like a whole online empire for myself. And it's kind of crazy. And that's why like excuses really piss me off with people. And I usually don't even talk about these things. You've asked to kind of hear my past, because I don't even think about any of this shit.
Yeah.
I don't wake up in the morning and say I'm a criminal or I'm an ex-con. None of that stuff phases me at all. I wake up in the morning and I'm who I want to be. And so many people have so many excuses. These kids that they come out of college and they have a 4-year degree and they have literally the world is at their fingertips. They have every advantage and they still find a reason to have an excuse. I didn't look for any excuses. I moved to New York. I had, you know, not that much money and literally Wi-Fi and a dream. I mean, I went there with a laptop and the shirt on my back and a couple of bags. And I slept on the floor the first month, and the floor that I slept on had bed bugs. So I ended up getting bit, and I'm sleeping on the floor getting bit by bed bugs, and all because I wanted my freedom. And then I went and I evolved and I got a new place, and then I got in a better place. And then, you know, I made new friends and I made new business partners, and, you know, ended up creating a multi-million-dollar business, all while on the run from the law, and a legitimate business too. And so when I hear people, you know, with excuses, it really doesn't make sense to me. So then I ended up getting locked up, and the entire time I did 18 months in prison, give or take a little bit less. And the entire time I'm getting checks from Google, so Google's sending me money the whole time. And then I got out and I got right back on my feet. I was required by law to work a job. So I ended up getting hired by one of my clients, who I helped him create a 7-figure business. And he showed up at the courtroom and said, you know, this guy's amazing. I'm going to hire him the second he gets out. I had written him letters beforehand. But so many people have so many excuses. And I have friends from, I have really two main friends from before I was arrested. And literally everyone else in my life I don't talk to, like kids from kindergarten. Like, it's crazy that people still hang out with the kids that they know in kindergarten. Like, you didn't choose those friends. You just showed up and they were there.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're living your whole life based on who was in kindergarten, especially if you didn't go to a good school, is really ridiculous. But I have two friends who I didn't know them since kindergarten, but they were my friends right before I got locked up in New York. And I love them both to death, but they're still doing the same thing that I was doing 10 years ago. Like, they're still doing the exact same thing, and there's no progression. And I don't understand how people live their life like they're going to get a second shot. Like, you're not going to get a second shot. If you don't start your business today, it's not going to happen. If you don't make your Shopify store happen today, it's not going to happen. You don't make your blog happen today, it's not going to happen. When I started my first blog, I was writing 20 articles a day. It was all me writing it. You know, and eventually we got contributors. Eventually it turned into a movement. Eventually it blew up. But people don't see that. People see you at the finish line. They see the shit I post on Instagram. You know, they might see a steak that I'm eating. And they think, okay, entrepreneurship is eating steak. But it's like, no, there were like 20 other steps that we got to before we got to that A7 steak, you know? So I really think that people just need to stop making excuses. I have so many reasons to not be successful. I have so many reasons to live a mediocre life.
Dude, I'm so like, thank you so much for being so vulnerable, because I didn't know that deep into it, right? Like, I didn't know the 18 months of being locked up. I didn't know like that past of like, man, like you've had a mess and now you've turned it into your message. And I'm actually like, this is what Power Talks about, right? So you can hear someone's powerful story and implement it into your life. And you said it best, if anyone's listening to this right now, run it back about 5 minutes. He speaks about how you shouldn't hang out with your past friends. Why? Because the past people reinforce the past in you. And at least for me, I don't want to be reinforced by my past. I am trying to run as far as hell from that thing as possible because I don't want to be around that. I don't want to be in that environment. He speaks of that. Don't be around the past because it's going to reinforce the past. Be around people that are going to bring good into you. Be around the person that gave him that job when he got out of jail. Be around those people that believe in you because what you nurture will grow, right? And that leads me to asking, what has been one of the best things about your entrepreneur journey? I know that, you know, I think it's a different experience when you come from a background like we've come from, right? Where it's kind of trouble and you've kind of been doubted and you're super disqualified in what people say disqualified because you're a felon or you have a record. You know what I mean? So for me, it's like, I'm always so appreciative when I get to be in a room with people that I never thought I would be in. You know, I'm so appreciative where I got to be on the stage and I got to tell my story. Like, that's crazy. In another state, in another island, right? Like, so for you, what is that feeling of like, what do you enjoy most about being an entrepreneur and what is the hardest?
Well, I like being able to author my destiny. And, you know, honestly, I wasn't forced into entrepreneurship, but for anyone with a criminal record, you almost are, because if you want to have a good life, a lot of doors do close. You know, there are corporate doors that they are harder to get into. Now, that's not to say when I came out, I did work the corporate ladder. I had a bunch of really good paying jobs, office jobs. I worked in marketing agencies. I worked at high level IT firms, ended up working with Armani and Whole Foods and all these crazy companies that I never would have worked on otherwise. But there are doors that close, but it's almost like a gift and a curse. It's almost like a blessing in disguise. You know, it was funny at the Disrupt event, my girl was in the back of the audience and she was listening to some of the stories. She listened to yours, which is amazing, very powerful speech that you gave, and then John Malott, Ryan Stueman. She's like, oh my God, are all these entrepreneurs, did they all go to jail? They're all criminals. And I was like, well, you know, it's almost like a gift in a way, because you're forced into entrepreneurship. And then it's like, okay, well, if I want to be successful, there's almost no turning back. There's no safety net. You know, it was like that when I went on the run. I mean, I had warrants and it was literally like become an entrepreneur or die. I couldn't get a job. I was scared.
Yeah.
Thought, hey, if I get a job, like they're going to come find me. And that may have not been the case, but that was my reality at the time. And, you know, I think more people need to put their own back up against the wall. When I moved to Puerto Rico, I put my back against the wall. I got rid of all my worldly possessions and I quit my job and I moved to Puerto Rico. And that's a crazy thing to do. But sometimes you have to do that. But if I had to say my favorite thing about entrepreneurship, or at least in the way that I've decided to manifest it in myself, because honestly, everyone's an entrepreneur. The guy that sells hot dogs is an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But the way that I've been able to manifest my business is that I have this incredible opportunity to surround myself with amazing people from all around the world, such a diverse group of people that I've been able to call my friends and my colleagues. You know, people like John Malott, who I was just at his wedding last year. People like Ryan Stueman and Dean Graziosi and Ty Lopez and John Lee Dumas. I was just on his podcast. It's like all these amazing rock star, cool people. And now their numbers are in my phone, right? I had lunch with a billionaire yesterday. Like that wouldn't happen if I wasn't doing what I'm doing now. And so being able to kind of move through different social ladders and go get all these different perspectives and create new friends, create new connections. You know, business and entrepreneurship is definitely the equalizer when it comes to climbing the social ladder and being able to connect and network with people, network with politicians, network with the people that are shaping our future.
Yeah.
And I'm writing a book, and one of the chapters, it's called Stay Away from Losers. And it talks about avoiding the wrong people in your life because they can cost you everything. The wrong friends, the wrong connections, the wrong place at the wrong time can really cost you everything. But it's also twofold. You know, if you surround yourself with five losers, you'll be the sixth. If you surround yourself with five billionaires, you'll be the sixth. So the thing that I'm most grateful for in entrepreneurship is maybe finding some of those father figures, finding those people that can act as mentors. If you look at families that have wealth, I've been studying this a lot lately. I'm actually getting married at the Vanderbilt Hotel, which it used to be the Vanderbilt Mansion in Puerto Rico. And I've been studying like these people of great wealth, these people that have these legacy dynasties, legacy families, and they set up their family like a company. It has like a shield and it has a logo basically, right? And it has a crest and it has, you know, rules and regulations and it has lawyers and accountants. It's called the family office that's all assigned to working on the entire family. And if you're part of the family, you get access to that. And, you know, growing up from a single mom, I didn't have any of that. But now how can we create that? How can we create networks of like what you're doing with your Facebook group? And your community, how can we create these networks? Whereas, okay, my last name isn't Vanderbilt, but how can I create a network and a community around me that's comparable to someone like a Vanderbilt or a Carnegie?
I love that. And you talked about a lot of good points in there. Making sure that you're putting yourself in a growing environment. I think that so many people that when they're self-driven, they think that they could still keep the past people around them. They think that they could do the past habits. They think that that doesn't affect them. But in the long run, it really does. And you spoke about being of service. And I love what you're doing right now with Disrupt and really turning what you know and wanting to impact individuals and make a difference. I think that being a like your fiance said, being a criminal or an ex criminal, it does really put us in a corner to say, man, I got to do something great. But I think that the mission gets bigger as you see how blessed you are to change your life around. Now you started up the Disrupt Foundation. I saw that you gave out a bunch of laptops recently to a bunch of students that need it. You're always, you know, giving, you're always trying to do more for the community. And I think that the story behind it that got you to do that is really inspiring. So I want to touch on it a little bit. You were at Landmark, which is a conference, which again, listen to what he's saying. He was at a conference. He got around right people. He found a mentor. These are all things you guys want to do. So you go to Landmark, this conference, and it's with a friend that you brought into it. He's never really been to one of these things. He had a business that was a tourist company. When the hurricane hit Puerto Rico, he went ahead and turned it into a nonprofit, made it his truck or his van like a relief truck. Asked him, like, why are you doing this? And he says he never loved what he has done more. You take in the Landmark. Landmark, you go to this conference, and you guys are both so blown away. And he runs up to you and says, we need this in Puerto Rico. How can we do this in Puerto Rico? And you just said, you know, you packed up all your stuff and you just went. What was that pivotal moment like for you? Like that aha moment of, wait, I could be a world shaker right now. And hey, I could change a whole entire ecosystem. Hey, I could be a marker now. How was that for you?
Yeah. So yeah. Shout out to David from I Got Tours PR. Yeah, it was really synchronicity. And also shout out to Euphemia. So a few months before I met David, when the hurricane first happened, probably about 2 months before I met David, when the hurricane first happened, me and another friend, Euphemio, we sent cases of water over. And then we start looking on the news and like the cases of water that we sent over, they weren't getting where they needed to go. And then I met with David and we sat in a diner across the street from Landmark after the event. And we just started talking about, you know, the problems that were facing Puerto Rico. He was there on the ground. He had lived there for 7 years at the time already. And I just started coming up with solutions. Hey, there's no lights. Okay, solar panels. What about solar panels? I'm not Elon Musk, but solar panels. And then he started talking about the economy and how one of the number one drivers of the economy is tourism and how now less people are coming. So now there's less tourism. They also moved the military base, which affected the economy too. There's a lot of people on that base that were spending money on the east side of the island. But we start brainstorming, coming up with all these ideas. And then I looked at people, and these were some ideals that I learned in Landmark. I looked at people like Martin Luther King. I looked at people like Gandhi. I looked at all these world leaders. And I realized that a lot of these people are one person. It's one dude. None of those people I listed were elected. They were not chosen. They chose themselves. And they took responsibility for something that's bigger than themselves. They took responsibility for millions of people. Gandhi took responsibility for actually 3 billion people. There's 3 billion people in India. So I said to myself, if Gandhi can take responsibility for the 3 billion people in India, little Puerto Rico, a little small island, should be a piece of cake. I'm going to take responsibility for the 3 million people there. And at that time, my Spanish was worse than it is now, and it's still not that good. And I could barely speak Spanish, and I had only been to the island a few times since I was a kid, since my grandfather passed away. I used to go to his house, but after he passed away, we stopped. And I didn't know the island, and I didn't really know what I was going to do or how I was actually going to do it. But none of that mattered. And I bought a one-way plane ticket down to Puerto Rico. I got a bunch of crazy entrepreneurs together. Shout out to Hugo Sanchez and his company, Modi. They helped donate 500 solar panel lights together with the director of operations at World Star Hip Hop. And we then went down to Puerto Rico. We ended up linking up with Crazy Legs, who was getting funding from Red Bull, and Fat Joe and Jay-Z donated a plane to bring stuff down. It was this crazy movement. And it was crazy to be able to like just go down there and you think you're going to be the only one, but no, there's all these different initiatives. There's another initiative we linked up with, Veterans for PR. And it was just a bunch of army vets, and these were white dudes, didn't even speak Spanish, most of them. And they just went down there to help. And they FEMA wasn't releasing the aid, but since they were in the army, they were kind of using their connections to get some of the water and aid released. And then they were doing distributions and disbursements. And they had taken over a restaurant and converted that restaurant into like an army bunker. And they were all sleeping on cots everywhere. And they were all just volunteers, just there helping. And I connected with all these crazy people, and I was a crazy person myself. We just went like door to door, knocking on people's doors, giving out these solar panel lights. And I remember thinking, even in the midst of all the aftermath, all the carnage, all the devastation, the island was still so beautiful. And I'd almost felt like we'd been lied to our whole lives. Where we're told to chase material things and we're told to work, 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 hustle, 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 right? That's like the New York mindset, is all that hustle and bustle.
Yeah.
And I just realized that the island itself is just so beautiful and had so much to offer. And the people that were suffering there, they were really the people with no money and no resources. The people that were middle class, they left. They went to places like Miami. They went to places like New York, Orlando, and they were fine. The people that were higher class, they were fine as well. They had money for backup generators. They could buy bottled water if the water coming out of the sink was dirty. And they also were fine. And it was really the people that they couldn't afford to get on a plane and leave. They couldn't afford to fix their roof if their roof got knocked down. They were the people that got hit the worst.
Yeah.
And I realized that they have the same internet connection as me. I make my living off my laptop. I mean, initially... or at one point in my life, it was by force, right? I had to make my money off the grid. but I make my money from my laptop. And it doesn't matter if I'm in Puerto Rico, I can make the same amount of money. So I wanted to teach that down in Puerto Rico. So I was there for 2 or 3 weeks, came back a couple of weeks later, and I attended a giant cryptocurrency conference where I did an interview that went semi-viral, and where I was compared to this other billionaire that's on the island, that's trying to do some good work. And then a few months later, I decided to move down full time and
I love and that
start to shrub.
That's a powerful story, man. Seriously, like it was more or less you're forced to be great. Like literally, like you had no choice. You just had to be great. And I loved it because you ended up choosing the right road. So I want to ask you some questions in regards to business and entrepreneurship. After hearing, you know, your perspective, I'm going to really enjoy these answers. So my question to you is, what characteristics or skills are most important when you are building a business or when you're building a brand?
Well, you know, one thing before I went down to Puerto Rico, before I moved full time, I had this sense of urgency that if I didn't do it now, I would regret it. There's certain things that if you don't do now, in your head, you kind of justify it and you say, oh, I could always do that later, right?
Yeah.
Maybe losing weight, maybe getting married, finding the person that you're going to marry. Maybe it's starting your business. So I could do it later. And I think one of the things that made me so successful with Disrupt and the latest venture that I've been working on is that there was no later. I knew that if I waited 5 years, I could still move to Puerto Rico. It's still a thing I could do. But I wouldn't be able to make the impact at the exact time and the exact place where it was needed the most. And I just knew I would regret it. And I think, to answer your question, that is the thing that is missing from almost every wannabe entrepreneur that I see, is that they do not have a sense of urgency. There's no sense of urgency. You know, when I started my first online magazine, and now I have a new one, Disrupt Magazine, but back then I had like a music and pop culture centric site. When I started that, I was on the run from the law. I had such a sense of urgency behind me.
Man, I love hearing this. It's just such a raw freaking story. Anyone listening to this right now, if you are not fired up, I know he's monotone as hell, but if you are not fired up by what he is saying, I don't know what to tell you. This is like a true story of fuck your excuses. Like, your excuses, like, this guy started up a damn magazine that is now a big article that everybody wants to be featured on. I just got featured on it, and I looked, and there's so many big freaking players.
Oh, no, it's crazy. On people's sites, they list it next to Forbes. It's like, yeah. I've been on Entrepreneur, Forbes, and Disrupt.
Yeah, it's nuts. And, like, he did this while he was running from the law. Like,
well, no, I didn't do that when I was running from the law. Not this magazine. It's
okay. Okay.
It's no one.
It's just a
point. Hope the feds aren't listening.
Yeah. don't get me. But seriously, like, it's just inspiring, man. Like, I agree with you on every point you're making, and I'm sorry I interrupted you, but it fires me up when I hear that. Like, that's what I do this for, and that's why I want to stay around people like you, because these are the people that I want to be around. This mindset, this like go getter, but like go do the right thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's no excuses. I moved down to Puerto Rico. I started the podcast in it was such a small room. It was August, which is the hot month. And I rented a room sight unseen on Craigslist. I was like, I need to go down. I need to just like have a place when I get there that it's fine. And then I'll like find my permanent place. And he had a logo, like an emoji of a Wi-Fi, an emoji of the beach, and an emoji of coffee. I was like, perfect. It's the fucking place for me.
Yeah.
There was no emoji of air conditioning. So I'm in this small room, no air conditioning, no fan. I ended up buying a fan and like trying to rig it up to this small ass window. And it was like 1,000 degrees. So I used to wake up every day and I used to walk like 10, 15 blocks. And I used to go to a Starbucks. And then I would just work from Starbucks the entire day. But, you know, I fucking had to figure it out. And so many people, they have so many excuses. And that's why I think entrepreneurship doesn't work out for people, because they expect things to be handed to them. It's like, no, you have to get out there. You have to work. You have to grind. You have to take some risks. You have to be okay with failing. But I think that the biggest thing is a sense of urgency. And if you don't have a sense of urgency, like I've told some stories where, you know, it's the law or it's a hurricane, a national disaster, or, you know, we're getting rid of all my stuff, right? Create a sense of urgency, right? Yeah. So that's what I did when I moved down to Puerto Rico. I wrote an article in Forbes and I sent it into Forbes and it said, "Bye, Mom, moving to Puerto Rico." And I lived in New York when that happened.
Yeah.
But I knew if that article went out and I still lived in New York, I was going to look like an asshole. So I hopped on a plane and I got myself down there so that my words matched my article, or my actions matched my words rather. But yeah, I think if there's not a sense of urgency in your life, then how can you create that? Maybe quit your job, you know, maybe tell your boss to fuck off. And a lot of times people have to do that, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So what are some tips to get your business to serve your life and not run your life?
I'm still trying to figure out that myself. I think being okay with letting other people do the work. You know, I say that and I joke, but I'm so much better than I used to be. You know, hire VAs. You can go on Upwork and get people for $5 an hour, $10 an hour.
So delegation.
Yeah. Delegation, systemizing things, right? You can go on Zapier and set up little automations. Hey, when I get an email, send me a text. When someone buys something, send the Slack message.
Yeah.
There's all these little automations that you can do to kind of streamline things. And I think the biggest thing is just stop trading time for money, right? So many people are caught in trading time for money, even in entrepreneurship, right? They do consulting, but it's by the hour. And I try to really encourage people to try as much as you can, not to trade your time for money. And that's why I'm a big believer in courses. Disrupt University is what we do. We sell courses and it's great because you can take your experience and your knowledge. You can put 40, 50, 100 hours into a really great course. And then after those 100 hours are spent, you can go ahead and sell that over and over and over again, similar to a book. Where you work on the book for a long time and then you're able to sell the book over and over and over again. So I think, you know, taking your knowledge and recording it is so important and it's so easy. You can even do that in your organization. You can record a tutorial for your VA. And now when you hire a new VA, boom, you have a tutorial for it. So I think recording your knowledge and learning how to clone yourself and multiply yourself is really important.
Well, you guys heard that there. This is probably the fourth person in a row that I asked that question to. And they say the same thing. Delegate, put some systems and processes in place, and it's okay to trust people.
Let me get one more in there. Raise your fucking prices.
Yes.
Everybody, just raise your prices right now. Just do it. And you whatever said, you're charging, charge double.
Yeah, and what you said too about, you know, charging hourly. Man, like I'm a course junkie. I'm a subscription junkie. If it's good, if it's valuable, I buy it, right? And like what I'm realizing is if you charge hourly, it's probably the biggest mistake you're going to make, especially if you're someone that has a good following, especially if you're someone that people want to talk to, because what you're going to lead yourself into is burnout, or you're going to lead yourself into overbooking. And I say that because that's what I did when I started. I'm like, man, I'm getting my foot in the door hourly. Fuck that. I drowned. Like I literally drowned. I'm like, man, I can't do this anymore. I'm doing it like every freaking hour. I'm getting too many people. You gotta not work harder, work smarter. Just because you're working smarter doesn't mean you're not working just as hard. I don't think that we're meant to work like dogs and work like slaves. I think we're meant to be innovative, use our mind and leverage it to giving other people opportunities to help create our opportunities, right? So how would you say that you define success? For me, I believe that success requires a different level of me every year. So every year, every season, it's a different level of success for me, or the definition. So for you, how would you define success?
Success. Number one is
right now.
Wipe my credit card, shit works.
Yeah.
That's been my definition of success is like pretty much my whole life since I was a little kid. When I swipe my card, it works. The amount that's in there doesn't fucking matter. As long as when I fucking swipe it, it works. I can go where I want to go. That's actually a good kind of mini story. I started traveling first class when I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
I maxed out my credit cards traveling first class.
I love that.
I like had no money. I was fucking broke. And I was like, you know what? If I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down on the fucking Titanic. And I started taking first class flights everywhere. I was like, fuck this. I'm going to fucking live my life. I want to not even like I'm going to meet somebody on the plane because it's not even about that. Like, I don't even want to bother people. I don't want anyone to bother me when I'm on a plane. But it's more about I want to be in an abundance mindset. I want to push myself so that I can afford first class. And if I don't stop buying coach seats, I'm never going to push myself because then I don't need the money. I don't need that much money. I don't need it. So sometimes investing in things, stretching yourself beyond your means is important because now you find a way. Hey, I'm going to hire someone even though, I'm not sure if I can afford to pay them. Or I'm not sure if I can pay myself after I hire them, but you know what? I'm going to try to do it anyway. Or you know what? I'm going to buy that expensive computer or that expensive camera or that piece of gear. Or I'm going to, you know, buy a nicer place to stay because I know it's going to improve my well-being. Or I'm going to hire a personal trainer. Or I'm going to hire a coach or invest in a course. Because then once you do that, it opens up space. People think that money... it's like something that you hoard, right? Like, oh, I'm going to get all the money, but I'm going to hold on to it. And it really doesn't work like that. Money flows. So the more money that you spend, it sounds kind of crazy. And obviously you don't spend all your money on stupid shit, but the more money that you spend, as long as it's towards your business in the right way, the more money that you invest into your business, into yourself, the more money that will flow back in. When you just try to hold on to money and you don't want to hire a VA, you don't want to hire any employees, you don't want to spend any money on marketing, you don't want to spend any money on a course to help you level up, then you're going to stay stagnant.
Yeah. And I love that because it's so true. I know that I've learned that from a mentor. You get yourself in the environments that you can't afford it, not to say go put yourself in debt for it, but if you want to manifest it, you got to be in the room. You got to be around those bigger players. There's countless events that I went ahead just because I wanted to sit at that table. I wanted to meet those speakers. I wanted to be there where I was broke as shit. And I went there and I made it to the point where I got to shake hands with some people. Then I got some dinner and then I made relationships and I created opportunities. And I say that all the time. Like, I'm a firm believer in you pay to play. You pay to play. When I went over there to Puerto Rico with you, you know, that's the first thing I said. I'm like, well, what do we got to do? You're like, this event, this, we're doing this, we're doing this. I'm like, okay, cool. Swipe my card. You got pay to play. You know, because I just understand that you cherish it a lot more when you're someone like me where you don't really got it like that just yet. And you know that you're breaking bread to get to that point. And it goes back to the Bible, not to get biblical, but there's a story in the Bible where, you know, they're saying, you know, go ahead and give. If you have, give. And the people that have, they let's example, they have $100 and they're giving like $2, right? And the person that really doesn't have it, the woman that doesn't have anything at all, the last little drip of oil that she can give, she goes ahead and gives it. And God rewards her because that's a real sacrifice, you know, knowing that you don't got nothing, but you want to give all so you could get that return. And I think that's really what your story is about. And that's about, you know, that's what the Power Talks are about, is bringing in people that have a powerful story that we can implement their strategies, take their experience, and really make it a revelation for ourselves. So I love everything that you've had to say. And just to wrap it up, I do want to ask, how important is focus when you're building a brand? How important is focus when you're trying to come up with a blog, when you're trying to come up with a podcast, when you're trying to meet these big people and nurture these relationships when you know you're just not there yet? How important is that factor?
I think some people get caught up in the details. I don't know exactly what you mean by focus, but I do think people get stopped by wanting things to be perfect. And, you know, there's no such thing as perfect. I mean, I don't look behind me. This looks crazy. Moving into my new place, I'm going to build a studio. It's going to look crazy in a couple of weeks. But right now, I did jail these podcasts like this. Like, this is where I'm at. And so many people, they don't want to take action. You know, my first blog, they sucked. The first blog post, they sucked. My first podcast, they sucked. They were terrible. I remember I was reading questions. I had like the same couple of shitty questions that I used to ask everybody. And then I was like, maybe 50 episodes, I don't know, 30 episodes in. I don't know. I was pretty deep into it, but I didn't know how to do a podcast. And then one guy, he's some ClickFunnels 2-comma club guy. He was like, what are these questions you ask me? This feels like a script. I don't know. He said some fucking shit. And he's like, just be yourself. He says, you have a lot of personality. You don't need questions. And then from then I stopped doing questions. And now my podcasts are like a little better than they fucking were, whatever. And, you know, and then in 5 years, I'm going to look at the podcasts I do now and I'll be like, those sucked. But it's always a progression. You know, the fact that people are not launching their podcasts. There's people right now that they have an idea. I want to do a podcast. They're not releasing their book. They're not releasing their blog or their course or their whatever it is. They're not posting on Instagram because it's not perfect. It's not the perfect lighting or anything. I don't have a shape up. I'm guilty of doing that sometimes. I don't have a shape up. I'll post tomorrow. But you know, so people are so caught up in being perfect that they don't take action. And I think the thing that's been so crucial for me, so critical for me, is that I've been able to take action on things even when I wasn't ready. I didn't know how to host events. I don't fucking know how to host an event, but I started hosting them. And I didn't know how to do a lot of things and I just went for it. And you know, my events today, I'm helping to organize this TEDx that's coming up in Puerto Rico. This one's going to be at the Marriott. That's good. That's a good venue. You know, maybe a few years from now, I'll be in arenas, right? And I'll look at the stupid Marriott. I'll be like, that was a fucking joke. Look, cute Marriott, right? But for me right now, it's like, oh, wow, it's the Marriott.
Yeah.
So I think so many people, they're scared to throw a meetup. They're scared to throw an event. They're scared to take whatever that next step of action is because they're scared of failing in front of their peers. And it goes back to these kindergarten people like delete your Facebook. You know, I deleted my Facebook a while back and it's probably one of the best things that ever happened to me because I don't have to deal with any of my peers from my past. They're simply not there. But I think so many people, they get caught up in, okay, I'm building a personal brand and everything has to be picture perfect. And in reality, it's more of the raw things, the raw moments that tend to go viral. Where you're just being more authentic and you're showing more of yourself and you're showing more of your flaws and your pain, right? If you look at like before and after fitness pictures or even before pictures, right? There's guys right now that are on YouTube that I've been following and they have tons of followers. This guy called the Fasting Fat Man and he's documenting his journey and he's not there yet, but he's documenting it and that authenticity is what attracts people. So I think people really have to take risks. You know, events really changed my life. So I'm really happy that I'm able to share events and create and curate events for other people. I attended my first event in 2015. I went to California. I couldn't afford it. I slept in an Airbnb and like Ubered to the conference. And then at that conference, the guy pointed in the audience and he said, everyone in this audience needs to go ask for a raise. And so I went back to New York and I asked for a raise and I got it. And that changed the trajectory of my life. And I met all these cool people and I interviewed a few places and I didn't get a job from that exactly, but I had the idea to get a better job. I had an idea to get into tech. I mean, I met people that worked at Microsoft. It was crazy shit.
Yeah.
And then years later, I went to a mastermind in Miami. And again, the same thing. I fucking didn't have a dollar. I went down there to actually speak and I didn't have a fucking dollar in my pocket. And I rented a car. I was going to sleep in my car, but I had a friend down in Miami that let me crash at his place. And then I closed $40,000 in business while I was down there. And it's like, okay, well, that wouldn't have happened if I didn't push myself to be in the right scenario.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, just to sum it up, I think don't be scared to get into situations that you're not ready, because if you're waiting to be ready, you're going to be waiting for the rest of your life.
Man, I love it. I love it. I love it. Now, if you could have dinner with any legend, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Wow, Jesus. Any legend, dead or alive? I'd really like to sit down with Tony Robbins because I think he just had his 60th birthday. Shout out to him. And I really think he's getting old. And I think a lot of these guys that have been doing this stuff for a while, they're getting old. And it's time for some of these guys to pass the baton. So I'd love to have a one-on-one with him and talk about him passing the baton over some of us young cats.
I I love that. I love that so much, man. And thank you so much, Tony, for being a part of the podcast. I know that it's been a long time coming, and I know you're super busy. So I really enjoyed this conversation today. And anybody listening to this, go give him a follow on Instagram. He's under Disrupt CEO. Again, that's Disrupt CEO. And what should the people be on the lookout when they are following you? What are you up to? Where can they find you? Where's your podcast? Tell them a little bit more, because I know that the power players listening to this, they're going to go ahead and give you a follow.
Yeah, definitely. Hit up disruptmagazine.com. That's the best place to find out more about me and what's going on. There's also the stories of countless amazing entrepreneurs on there. The podcast is now integrated in there. So, you know, as soon as you get there, you'll see the little podcast player. You can listen to our episodes, and then the links to the social media are all in there, and the links to the events are all in there. The next event, I have a couple events coming up. TEDx in Puerto Rico, April 4th, the Warren Buffett Shareholders Conference / EvolveCon with Pat Tucker is coming up May 1st and 2nd, and that's in Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska. And then the Wall Street Experience, August to be announced. Then we have an event in Miami coming up as well. That's going to be in the late spring. And then the next Disrupt Conference, disruptweek.com, and that will be in September.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for being on here. I want to go ahead and take a picture with you if we can. So let's get it. Where's my mouse? Okay, there you go. 1, 2, 3.
Sweet.
Awesome. Thank you again, Tony. And I will.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, really looking forward to seeing you at the next Disrupt.
Yeah, let's go, man. Have a good one. And make sure you tell Gabby I said hello. I know we got a podcast coming up too, so I'm excited.
Absolutely. I'll see you soon. Ciao.
I will say it again, it is not how you start, it's how you finish. This conversation was very, very impactful for me. One, because Tony Delgado is a self-made millionaire. Number two, because Tony Delgado comes from exactly where you and I come from, humble beginnings, and what he did was take something and make it into a great opportunity, not only for himself, but to become a servant leader and really lead the way to wanting to help individuals get out of their situation and their circumstances by utilizing one of the things that everybody in the world does. The internet, using the web to go ahead and scale businesses, using the web to go ahead and make opportunities for individuals to win in life. And I love that. And I love passionate people. And I love people that are in a position to lead the right way and get individuals to learn from their experiences so they can have a little shortcut, so they can have someone that's in their circle, and so they can know that you're not alone. So my number one takeaway from this conversation was exactly that. If you're not first, you're last. And most importantly, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So I wanna know what your major takeaway was below. Go ahead and let us know in the review section what you got from this conversation and if it was something powerful for you. And let us know when you go ahead and take action how it has helped you excel in your business, your personal growth, and with your relationships. So you guys know I like to tell you this, and this is the one thing that I will ask of on this show, is to go ahead and subscribe. If you like what I'm saying, like what I'm doing, like what you're seeing, make sure you push that subscribe button. And most importantly, if you think this conversation is something that can benefit an individual, resonate with an individual, don't be freaking selfish. Go ahead and push this out to your network. You never know. This might change your life. This might change someone else's life. And someone might need this exact conversation just like you enjoyed it. So most importantly, if you like what I'm saying, you like what I'm doing, you like what you're seeing, go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Azonani, that's A-Z-O-N-A-N-I, and Empower Tribe, that's I-N-P-O-W-E-R-T-R-I-B-E, the Empower Tribe. So I'm super excited for you guys to see the next couple guests that are on these shows. Make sure to leave us some love. Let us know how we're doing, how we're living, how we're being, and let us know if there's anything that we can adjust. I love you guys, and as I always say, let's go and let's grow. I'll see you on the next episode.